Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather around the radio. It's time for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show, and the host and its founder is Carol Marks, one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism. And Carol will be talking with Sam Dawson, Ms. Sam Dawson, in this program. She's a philanthropist, an activist, an actor, a retired publicist, and the author of a book titled Broad Appeal, Wit and Wisdom from Women Ages 60 to 90, published by Abbott Press. And now let's kick off the program with Carol Marks, front and center, in conversation with Lily Leonardi. She worked in law enforcement for more than two decades and joined the FBI as Community Affairs Coordinator, where she served until 2010. She's going to talk to Carol about her new book titled In the Shadow of a Badge, a memoir about Flight 93, A Field of Angels, and My Spiritual Homecoming, published by Word Association Publishers.
What agency tasked you to be a first responder and assist at the scene of Flight 93's crash site in Pennsylvania?
Well, I started in law enforcement almost 30 years ago, 1984. I began my career as a police officer in a small community in Pennsylvania called Arnold, a small third-class city. And I was the first female to be appointed to a police as a police officer in that time period. And I spent almost 10 years on patrol and specialized in crimes against children investigations and also crime prevention. I then went on to become the director of security at Carlow University and 2 years later to Chatham University. They're both colleges located in the Pittsburgh area. And in 1997, I had been working. There were about 40 of us that had been asked to serve with the Department of Justice training team. And during one of those trainings, a gentleman from the FBI, he was the special agent in charge here in the Pittsburgh office, asked me why I wasn't working for the FBI. And I told him that I was past, the age of where you could be appointed as an agent. And he said, asked me, you know, how old I was, and I think at that point I was about 40 years old, 41. And he said that he had a position opened that related to community and public affairs, and he thought that I would have the perfect credentials. So the long and short of it is I applied, and I finished up top candidate and was appointed in 1998. So fast forward to 2001 and 9/11. Just like everybody, I was on the phone or here in my house, and I had to call in to the office. And when I stepped back inside, I saw on the television Diane Sawyer. I had had the television on mute because I was making phone calls, and I saw one of the Twin Towers behind her and with the gaping hole in the fire and, you know, the smoke. And at first thought it was probably a movie trailer that they were talking about, you know, a movie or whatever. And when I hit the volume, the first thing I heard was that ABC News just confirmed that a passenger plane had struck one of the Twin Towers. And like everybody else, I watched as the series of incidents occurred. And then began calling into the office, like probably most everyone that worked for the Bureau, and asked what we were supposed to do, and was told that it was everyone was requested to come into the office. And then they were asking for volunteers to go up to the Flight 93 crash site and take mobile command up. So,
and that's just what you did.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yes,
with the others. And mm-hmm. It was just amazing, this whole experience when all our lives changed. Can you describe the crime scene at Shanksville, Pennsylvania, when you got there 3 hours after the crash? What made the crime scene so unique from the others that you had been on?
Well, first and foremost, I'd never been to a plane crash, but we also know that it was the series, and just like everyone else, even though you're in law enforcement profession, you have the same thoughts and emotions. We suppress them, but you're still thinking. So the whole way up, I had you know, just like we were trained in way back when I went to the police academy, you kind of get yourself mentally prepared for what you know are going to see. So I had visualized in my mind what would be there. So when we pulled in, the firefighters were you know, leaving the scene, and you could tell by their faces. They looked like they were like haunted almost, you know, like despair, great. And so the first things I'll say when we got out was the smell, the pine and the jet fuel. Was very suffocating for me. And then as we looked up, we stood up on a bluff. If you look at the memorial as it exists today, where the 40 trees are that represent the passengers and crew, it overlooks where the original crash site was, where there's that huge rock is, it sits on that piece of property. And the first thing that entered my mind was, you know, where were the bodies? I had this expectation. And then, of course, it was almost like being three people there. First, it was the law enforcement officer having all these questions about what I was seeing, what I wasn't seeing. The mom who was thinking how blessed I was to be able to see, you know, I talked to my daughter, and how many mothers were going to mourn that day for not being able to talk or hold or, you know, touch their child again. And then there was the spiritual side of me that was screaming, you know, my God, well, how could anyone, you know, commit acts in his name? And
absolutely. And then on top of there being really no remains and no sounds of birds or animals, you first saw a shimmer of light that grew until it was blinding, and then it evolved into a foggy white mist. And then it miraculously turned into... what unbelievable story.
Well, what I call Legion of Angels. And as that cloud or the mist moved and moved, it looked like there were hundreds of them in formation, almost like a military formation. And each of them was as beautiful as the other. They were very tall and radiant. And I saw what looked like both female and male features. One stood out in front, and I knew it to be Michael, Archangel Michael. He had a saber that his sword was pointed down to the ground, and they were dressed in what looked, appeared to me from, you know, reading, like all of us, what we learned in history, like Roman centurion gear, you know, and they're hard. I've tried even in the book to describe it as best I can, but they were even more beautiful than what the book says. But they also made you feel peaceful, but at the same time protected, like that nothing else was, you know, was going to happen, and that they were there to promote, you know, the peace of what had transpired. And I also believe in, you know, in my way, and again, not to place my beliefs on someone else, but I believe that they were there to take the souls that you know, chose to go with them back to heaven too.
And they were such brave people.
Oh yes.
That diverted that plane from, we don't know what kind of damage would have happened in Washington. Mm-hmm. Now, you also saw more than just the shapes and the angels in the mist. Can you tell us about the mind-boggling story of the Bible from the plane that you found? Because the plane was basically burned up. That's why there's so few pieces of it. But the Bible was barely singed. And what was it on the page of the Bible that the wind happened to blow open, or was it just by chance?
Well, I don't think any of that was by chance. I mean, I believe I'd asked for a sign as we moved away, because we were asked to leave the grounds because we weren't in protective gear. We were, you know, in our street clothes. And as we moved away, first there was a suitcase in full tack, and then we moved away. And the whole time I'm looking back, and finally I asked God for a sign. Please give me a sign that I'm not losing, you know, my mind. I'm here to do my job. And we walked upon the Bible, and it was just singed on the edges. And one of the two men that I was there with, made the comment about there were no bodies, but that the Bible, you know, had survived. So as I'm asking, it's just like almost in split second time, this wind came in, the Bible blew open, and I saw Psalm 23. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, came this huge hawk that lifted up from the ground. And in my mind, I believed it was a sign that the angels were there, that I shouldn't question it. But then I also shouldn't tell anybody because, you know, you just don't say something like that to your fellow FBI employees.
And then you decided, when this was more than 10 years after the crash, to finally start writing about the remarkable experiences that you had at the crash. Why did it take you so long?
Well, the book itself began long before that, but as a means of journaling to heal. The first chapter about the angels I wrote in 2002, just shortly after the first anniversary of the event. And I tucked it in a book that I thought, if something were to happen to me, my daughter would find it because she knew that was my favorite book, a book my father had given me. But around 2005, 6, in through 2008, I started experiencing the problematic issues of the post-traumatic stress, and then also some health-related issues that come when you don't pay attention to what's going on emotionally. I thought it was important that day, which from my perspective and probably many others is the worst thing that I've ever experienced in my life. Now we've had other series of things. We've had the terrible events at Newtown. Mm-hmm. We've had the terrible events at the Boston Marathon that have, you know, all. But I felt that it was very important for everyone to know that there was a presence there greater than ours.
Lily Leonardi, in conversation with Carol Marx. Her book is titled In the Shadow of a Badge, a memoir about Flight 93, A Field of Angels, and My Spiritual Homecoming, published by Word Association Publishers. For more information, go to lilyleonardi.com. Carol Marx returns in conversation with a woman who wrote a book about broad appeal. That's next on A Touch of Gray. The talk show for grown-ups continues right here.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here again is the host of the program, Carol Marx, in conversation with Ms. Sam Dawson. She's a philanthropist, activist, actor, and retired publicist, and the book she wrote is titled Broad Appeal, Wit and Wisdom from Women Ages 60 to 90, published by Abbott Press.
Now, you say you were motivated to write the book when you turned 60 because you were experiencing that over-the-hill phenomenon. What were some of the things that bothered you?
Well, it was mostly physical changes at that time. You know, when you turn 60, things start to head south. And I do a lot of yoga, and when I'm in the down dog yoga position, I could count the rings on my legs, you know, like the tree rings on a, like the age rings on a tree. And I started fading away, and I just didn't like turning 60 at all. I had in mind 50. But, boy, 60 was just a big mark for me. And right now, honestly, Carol, I would give a dental implant to be 60 again. It was a great time.
Now, when you turned 68, though, your whole attitude about aging, you know, was so different. So what caused that?
You know, I'm not sure. But sometime right after 65, I just became much freer, and sort of the oughts, coulds, woulds, and shoulds of life just sort of melted away, and I thought, what the heck? I mean, this is a chance. I would been grousing about it for quite a while, and I thought, I wonder how other women feel. And so I just said, I'm going to give it a shot. So I set out to interview a bunch of women. I interviewed over 70 women for this book, and really found out that a lot of them felt just like me. We just don't think, feel, or act old. And I think you know that, Carol. I mean, you've been talking about this for a long time.
Now, how did you go about finding the women that you interviewed?
Well, first I just, you know, I was such an innocent. I had no idea that this would be over almost a four-year odyssey. I thought it would be so simple. But I just sort of sent out an email and I said, gee, if you're over 60, will you write for me? And if you're not, will you send this to your mom or to a friend or someone you know that's over 60? And I fooled around with that for about a year, and really I found that women were intimidated to write. But once I said, I'll interview you, everybody raised their hand. They said, oh, sure, you can interview me. And so, I mean, I could have kept going. I probably could have done 150 women. They were all anxious to share as long as they didn't have to write it down themselves.
I don't blame them.
Yeah, that's how it worked.
Now, one of the questions you asked the women you interviewed was, what surprised them about getting older, and what are a few of the main points they made, and did any of the things that they said surprise you?
Well, they did surprise me because, well, I thought I was the only one that, you know, always is like 10 years behind whatever age I'm supposed to be. But all the women really sort of felt like this, that they just don't feel or act old, and they're different than their parents, because I think the generation of at least my parents, and I'm now over 70, so I'm not quite a baby boomer. You know, I'm that generation a little bit before. But we're the hot generation. I mean, they call us the silent generation, but we're the ones that, you know, burned our bras and really made way for the boomers to come in. And what surprised me was that all of the women felt like I did. They really don't feel or act old, and they're not rocking chair grannies. They're out there doing things. They're alive. They're excited. They're filled with, wanting to exercise, wanting to learn, wanting to do new things. And that made me feel so good. It really was inspiring.
And you also questioned the woman you spoke to about what is great about their current age. And in a number of years, I'll be moving into my 80s, and I wouldn't want to be any younger because it wasn't until I got older, I got more relaxed, and I stopped wasting all my time following the latest trends and moving with the so-called in-group. Any comments about that?
Yes, I'm so with you on that one. I think that what we've discovered as we've gotten older is that we're more interesting, we're more interested in the world, we're bold, we speak our minds, we've let go, and I don't know why it takes so long, but we let go of the sort of the toxic people in our lives, and that's certainly one thing that I would love to see younger women do earlier. You know, that we, for some reason, once you're over 60, you start to say, hey, you know, what do I need those people in my life for? Why don't I just hang out with happy, hang out with positive? And really, I mean, it's been shown scientifically that people over 60 are basically way happier than the younger ones. Maybe it's because we don't have the same kind of obligations that we had to when we were younger. We've raised our families, we've done our careers. The obligations we take on are ones we choose rather than ones we have to have.
It's so freeing to do that.
Isn't it? Yeah, it really is. And so we're less a work in progress. You know, we are who we are. And it's pretty cool, I think. Happily.
I agree. Now, I think humor is the most helpful ingredient we can have as we age. And you have a lot of humor in your book. And you quote one woman, Teresa. I love what she said. I accept the change so long as I can function. I don't care. I want to be able to walk and feel good. I'll buy looser outfits if I have to and date nearsighted men. See, I never thought about that.
Well, it's true. Well, you know, and also, you know, one woman said that, you know, she didn't mind getting older. She just wished she could do it wrinkle-free, which, you know, I think we'd all would have loved that. But and another gal said that when she smiles, the wrinkles, you know, they go away and they turn into a big smile. So she just smiles a heck of a lot more than she used to. So, you know, that's what it takes.
And as you write in your book, as you grow older, you can have fabulous new beginnings, and volunteering is certainly one of them. How does helping others help the person who's doing it? And can you tell us about the organization you helped to found, Impact Giving?
Oh, and I'd love to. That's one of my favorite subjects. First of all, let me say something. One thing about volunteering, and I'm sure you know this, that we set out to volunteer when we have time because we think we're going to help all those poor people or whoever that is, that, you know, we're going to give our time and they're going to benefit. And what we discover is as we volunteer that the people that are helped the most are the volunteers, because when you give back, you just realize how terrific you feel. So you set out to help other people and you really help yourself. So I'm a huge proponent of volunteering. And thank you for asking about Impact Giving, because what we are is a women's collective giving organization. And our goal is rather audacious, but if anybody out there is listening and they would like to become part of it, we'd love to have them. It's women that together, collectively, they all put in $1,000 a year. And then that money collectively is given out and once a year through a granting process. And in our first 3 years in existence, we have granted $345,000 to 20 local and global organizations. So that's pretty good. That's a brand new funding source for nonprofits. And, so we're always looking to grow. We're about 140 women strong now, and we're hoping this year to get to 200, so we can give out $200,000 this year. So that's the plan.
Ms. Sam Dawson in conversation with Carol Marks. ImpactGivingNow.org is the website to get more information. You're plugged into A Touch of Gray.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security websites. Pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving, according to the U.S. Department of Energy. Speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray.
Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we come to the point in the program where we talk a bit about the media. We go behind the scenes in talk radio, and we're joined by our senior correspondent, Kevin Casey, who is also the vice president and executive editor of the trade publication that serves the talk radio business, Talkers Magazine. Well, Kevin, this has been a week in which, once again, the importance of radio has been in the spotlight as we look at the terrible tragedies in Oklahoma, Oklahoma City area, and the tornado that took so many lives and took so many buildings. And it just seems that a regular part of life, and I guess it's always been that way, is the natural disaster or the unnatural disaster. We've had both, and radio always seems to be there. This is one of radio's fortes, isn't it?
It is, and it's one of the shining moments when radio, assuming you keep power, and if you don't usually have generators, is able to keep people informed about the status of the events and about rescue and that sort of thing. And it's natural. It's natural for radio.
Yeah, and hopefully radio will continue to serve people on that level, even when there's not a tornado or a hurricane or a bombing or some type of a traumatic crisis that hits society. And it's interesting, I was doing some studies of statistics, and it's appalling the level of destruction that tornadoes wreak upon that part of the United States. Why don't they build houses that can withstand this pressure? I just don't understand it.
Funny you think of the fact that in places where there are lots of earthquakes, they do. But, I saw a show about this recently, and a very famous, I forget his name now, he's a futurist engineer, and he said that the dome-shaped house... A dome-shaped house will withstand forces far beyond what a tornado can deliver. But he said, psychologically, human beings aren't ready to live in dome-shaped houses because they must deem them too cheesily futuristic.
Mm.
It would seem almost silly to go look at a house that you were considering buying and finding out it was shaped like a dome, yet a very safe structure.
It's funny because the reality that we all live in is, in fact, a dome. You know, we live in a dome. That there's no way around it. Okay, well, food for thought. Kevin Casey, the Vice President, Executive Editor of Talkers Magazine. If you want to know what's going on in the talk radio world, check it out at the trade publication Talkers, located on the web at talkers.com. I'm Michael Harrison. You're plugged into A Touch of Gray, which continues right here in just a moment.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined the rest of the way this hour by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman. In this segment, Steve is talking to Martha Wash. She's the American R&B pop and soul singer-songwriter known for her distinctive and powerful soprano voice. She's probably most known as half of the Weather Girls and for her number one hit, It's Raining Men. She's put out her first collection of all-new material in almost 20 years, and it's titled Something Good on Purple Rose Records. Here now is Steve Wiseman talking with Martha Wash.
You know, it's funny. I was so familiar with so much of your work before I knew it was you. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's something you probably hear a lot.
Yes, it is.
And I know that's frustrating, and it can be frustrating, including... Well, let me talk about a couple things first, but I want to get to your lawsuit with Black Box, which I thought was terrific. Many people will remember you had 8 number one songs, including It's Raining Men, Gonna Make You Sweat, which I go, I don't know that song. They said, it's Everybody Dance Now. Well, of course I know that. Who wrote It's Raining Men?
Paul Jabara and Paul Schaefer.
That's so funny. I keep looking at Paul Schaefer, and I don't see It's Raining Men, but I guess he's got that, huh?
Yeah, he co-wrote it with Paul Jabara, yeah.
Wow. Now, who turned it down before you got it?
Barbra Streisand, Diana Ross, Cher, and Donna Summer.
Oh, so they went to a bunch of hacks before they went to you. did any of them ever talk to you afterwards and say, oops, boy, did I blow that?
No. No, I mean, now just stop and think about it. Can you actually hear Barbra Streisand singing It's Raining Men?
Yeah, you got a point there.
Or Diana Ross, you know.
You know, I can, but it's not coming out the same. It's kind of funny that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you started out as a background singer with Sylvester, but wasn't it true that sometimes the way the songs were mixed, Sylvester became the background singer for you?
No. No. Mm-mm.
No?
No, not while we were singing with him.
Okay.
No, we were the background singers.
Now, how difficult is it to make the jump from being the background singer to the person who is the lead?
Well, you just have a lot more responsibility. That's the main thing, because you're stepping from the background to the forefront. So there's a whole lot more that you have to take care of and make sure things are correct. You know, if you're just starting out, even if you're not a background singer, when you're starting out and you're at the forefront, everything is on you.
You feel it on your shoulders.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, one of the things that I found just so terrific as, you know, reading up on your history was the lawsuit that you won against Black Box. They didn't credit you or compensate you, even though you were singing lead vocals on all of their top 40 hits. People had to be telling you that you weren't going to win that, didn't they?
Well, some, you know, friends of mine in the business or whatever, they would say they, you know, they thought it was wrong and all this other kind of stuff. But it was settled, and I did win. And a lot of them told me later on, you know, I'm glad it happened for you, you know, because it wasn't right.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing, it sounded so outrageous, so unjust. And as a matter of fact, I think, if I'm right, your action may have even spurred legislation that requires credit to be given. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. You have to be credited some kind of way on the music.
That's great. But it does seem like you've had that battle to get the recognition for your work. Now, the new CD is kind of a different genre, isn't it?
Right, right.
What's this like?
A little bit more adult contemporary, a little bit more alternative to what people are used to hearing me sing.
You know, one of the songs is called It's My Time, and did you feel like this is your story, this is your time?
Sure, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. I've been doing this for a hot minute. For a hot minute, and in putting these songs together, I listened to that song and I said, I like it. I like it. You know, it speaks to not just me, but it speaks to a lot of people who may feel that things aren't going well for them. They're in situations that are very, very hard for them. But sometimes if you just kind of switch your change your thinking, I should say,
mm-hmm.
a little bit, and realize that you're going to stop whatever's going on, say, negatively, and just say, I'm going to do or I'm going to be the best that I can be, and say, this is my time now. I'm going to make the change now and move forward in a more positive direction.
No, it sounds great. Did you have a lot of hands-on control with the material on there and the production of the new CD?
Well, a gentleman by the name of Zach Adam produced the whole CD,
mm-hmm.
and he came up with quite a few of the songs on the CD. And, in fact, him and I wrote one song called Destiny. He's a great singer and songwriter and producer, so he knows what's going on. And I just like the music that he presented to me. And I said, this is going in a different direction, more alternative, more adult contemporary, a little pop, a little rock, you know, a little bit of everything there. But in keeping with all of that, songs that I hope will inspire people and make them feel good, you know, and just be the best that they can be.
Yeah. Were you concerned about making the change in the type of music that you were singing?
No, because I believe that my fans who have been with me all these many, many years will understand. And we all get older. We all have to make changes in our life and make new directions. And I felt this was the time for me. I can do dance music basically standing on my head. But this was something different that I wanted to try. And I've always been an artist where I felt like I wanted to do any kind of music that I wanted to do.
You know, and it's, well, you've built up over the years such a well of goodwill amongst your fans and people who've listened to the music. You know, it's the kind of thing where we're going to say, wow, that's different, but it's Martha Wash. I'm going to take a shot at that.
Right, right. And to get new fans as well.
Absolutely. Well, you know, that's it. It's going to be, you know, reaching out to people who maybe even weren't aware.
Right.
You know, going back when you took a song like It's Raining Men, I mean, which is just a huge, huge, monumental hit, did you think that it was going to be this big when you were first recording it?
No, not at all. In fact, we kept saying no.
We
didn't want to record the song. And Paul Jabara was who we were dealing with at the time. I had not met Paul Schaefer
mm-hmm.
at that time. But Paul actually begged us to record the song. He said, I need you to record this song. I know this song is going to be a hit. And we kept laughing and saying, you've got to be kidding.
Yeah.
And he said, no, no, no. I know this song is going to be a hit. And he was right. It was a big hit in the clubs long before mainstream radio even picked up on it.
Yeah, it's interesting how sometimes that happens. And, you know, you're mentioning to me, imagine Barbara Streisand or Diana Ross singing that. And, you know, as odd as that is, it's the flip side is it's really hard for me to imagine anybody other than you singing that. I mean, it just, it's like, no, you know, we're not putting a hat on the Mona Lisa here. You know, this is the way it is.
Well, we recorded it in about 90 minutes and walked out of the studio and said, okay, Paul, see you later. And that was it.
You're kidding.
Serious.
Wow.
Serious, yeah.
That's okay.
We went in about 2 days later after we listened to it in his living room. And he finally broke us down and we said, okay, fine. You know, it was just kind of like that. And went in the studio and recorded it and said, okay, it's like, okay, we did this for you. We're finished. Bye. See you later. Yeah. And it really, really blew up.
That's amazing. Well, you know, you've had the ups and the downs in a career. You've got the longevity that shows you've got the real talent, which is what rises to the top. And, you know, I really urge everybody to, if you want something good, get something good. And this is the first collection of new material by Martha Wash in 20 years. So it's great. Wishing you all the best, and we'll be listening to you.
Thank you so much. And where they can find it, they can find it on Amazon.com and iTunes as well. And just find a song on there that speaks to you or some songs that speak to you. And just kind of dance around your living room and have fun with it.
That's Martha Wash in conversation with our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman, and her new collection of material, first time out in 20 years with something brand new, is Something Good, published and pressed and put out there, however records are sold today, by Purple Rose Records. And now as we head toward the break, and Steve will be back with us to talk about Medicare fraud in the next segment, let's listen to a little bit of the sound of Martha Wash.
Ow!
Ow!
Ooh, 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 oo
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security webpages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said you're the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. We've come to the final segment of our hour, and we're rejoined by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman, Stephen J.J. Wiseman, Esquire. He's an attorney, he's an author, he's an expert on scams and fraud and elder care and all aspects of the law. As a matter of fact, his website, one of his websites, one that I recommend you check out, is called scamicide.com. He's also written The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall, and he's here now to talk about Medicare fraud. Steve?
Thank you, Michael. You know, Medicare fraud is a huge problem for society. And now where the whole issue of the cost of medical costs and Obamacare is so much on everyone's minds, it really is important to check into Medicare fraud, which has been estimated to cost anywhere from between $60 and $90 billion a year to we, the taxpayers. So it was kind of nice this week. About 100 people, including 14 doctors and nurses, were arrested and charged for their roles in different Medicare scams around the country. These totaled about $223 million in phony charges. This is just the latest thing that the Health and Human Services Department and the Justice Department have gotten together to crack down on this fraud. This is something that is really a cornerstone of the Affordable Care Act. It's kind of interesting when you look around the country to the places where the Medicare fraud is occurring. I suppose it's not too surprising that Miami, which has been known as really the center for very, very complex Medicare scams, many of them involving organized crime, who are seeing that they can get involved in this kind of crime, make a lot of money, and really have, until now, low risk of getting caught. So it was in Miami that 25 of the people were charged for their roles in various schemes. A lot of this involves bribing Medicare patients for their ID numbers. And this is something we all have to be aware of, that when someone is asking for your Medicare number, unless it's entirely legitimate and they need it, don't give it to them. Also, don't give it to them because, remember, your Medicare number is your Social Security number. Medicare hasn't caught on yet to the fact that this is creating a real problem for identity theft. And someone who has your Medicare number can also use it to make you a victim of identity theft. Detroit was another place where there was a lot of people caught in this sting. 13 doctors were also caught in Los Angeles. 400 agents across the country did these raids just this past Tuesday. And there were people in Miami, L.A., Houston, Brooklyn, Detroit, Chicago, Tampa, and Baton Rouge. So it's the kind of thing that is really showing the government is making an effort here. Because Medicare fraud in the past, a lot of the fraud dealt with medical care equipment that wasn't needed but billed for. Ambulance scams, all of these kinds of things. And what happened was that the money was paid out, and then the government was trying to get these people after the fact. And now they're really changing. They're putting in a high-tech kind of way of catching up with this crime, and they're trying to catch the people when the bills are put in before they're paid out. So it's one of the things that could be helping us all, but we're all in this together. And so you really have to be careful to guard your Medicare number and make sure you're dealing with legitimate people.
Thank you, Steve. Steve Wiseman on Medicare fraud. And check out Scamicide.com for more of Steve Wiseman's insights. That about does it. Thank you, Beverly Santinella on the front line, our producer. Thank you, Carol Marks, the host and founder of the program. Steve Wiseman, Kevin Casey, the entire Touch of Grey broadcast family. On behalf of all of us, Michael Harrison here in the anchor chair, inviting you to join us next weekend for another installment of The Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups.